my chair?
I'm special something.
Mike.
Who took my chair?
Tom.
Oh, shut it.
Wow.
Somebody got sold up the river. Illegitimately at that.
Wheels on the bus go round and round, round and round, round and round.
We gotta lock, at least lock Scott's chair.
You'd think the president would get a little regard.
Well, he doesn't move as much as I do. I am always squeaking.
So how do you say the sheik's name? Just sheik?
Bin. No.
Sheik Saad? Bin Mohammed bin Ali Allah Ta. Okay.
Ali Al Thani.
Ali Baba.
Saad bin Mohammed bin Ali Al
Thani. That's a whole lot of Al.
Thani. But okay. One bin wasn't enough. He had to have two bins.
Count it down.
Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to Stam Show Here Today, podcast number 15. I'm sitting here with Scott, Kaz, Tom, Jeff, and Steve Riedel, and I'm your host, Jessica. You can find us on Facebook at Stam Show Here Today and on Twitter at Stam Show HT. Tell your friends they can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Let's talk about stamps. So this week we'll be talking about stamp news, the federal duck stamp increase, stamp collecting and history, updates, hashtag stamp stories 2015, and our expert topic this week is bluish paper. So, stamp news. The Federal Duck Stamp Act of 2014, which proposes increasing the cost of federal duck stamps from $15 to $25, has been passed and now waits for President Obama's signature. This act will channel millions of additional funds towards wetlands and other waterfowl habitat across the country. The U.S. House of Representatives advanced a companion bill in November. This is a long overdue response to inflation and rising land costs since 1991, the last time the duck stamp price was increased. Since its introduction in 1934, the federal duck stamp has raised more than $750 million and has conserved more than 6 million acres of waterfowl habitat, according to Duck Stamps Unlimited. The group CEO, Duck Hale, released a statement thanking Senator Dave Vitter for his leadership in helping to pass legislation. The additional duck stamp funding provided by waterfowl hunters and other conservationists will not only conserve critical waterfowl habitat, but will also ensure the future of our waterfowling traditions, said Hall. On that note, there will be no increase in postage rates for 2015, and the quote, temporary 3-cent increase is still holding strong, which I guess surprises none of us.
The permanent temporary increase?
Yes.
Not only will there not be an increase, there will not be a decrease.
Yeah, that was the note from last one, that possibly there would be a reduction and people would renegotiate their forever stamps. Guess again.
How many instances of the government decreased anything like
Scott one. Well, the one that comes to mind is after World War One. They raised the rate in World War One to 3 cents, and they dropped it back to 2 cents after World War One for a first-class letter. That's the one that comes to mind.
Well, in 1847, it was 5 cents, and then they dropped it to 3 cents.
Yeah.
But it was also by distance then, and then they made it nationwide.
Yeah, actually, it was a much steeper drop than that. It was, in a lot of places, it dropped from 10 cents to 3 cents. So that was actually, percentage-wise, a huge drop.
Also, you have airmail reduction in rate. Mm-hmm. The original rate was 24 cents, then went down and down again.
Down and down until it was 5 cents.
Mm-hmm. So in a couple hundred years, this happened 5 times? Or 6?
Yeah, 5 or 6.
Okay, so stamp collecting history. We're going to talk about a famous stamp collector gone, fell off the face of the planet. I guess he passed away. And he...
he fell off the face and went under the face of the planet.
His name was Sheik Saad, and he was the main buyer for the DuPont auction lots.
Oh, come on. Say the whole name.
Oh.
No, don't. Don't make her. Don't torture her.
I think his living existence was canceled.
There we go.
He's suffering from a slight case of death.
Just like some of the stamps, he was canceled.
Yeah.
Oh.
So I guess he died suddenly with a huge bill. So what happens to lots that don't get paid for, like, of this magnitude?
Well, first of all, he didn't take them with him. If he had taken them with him, there would be a big problem. But obviously the seller was smart enough not to let the guy walk off with $7 million worth of stamps or $7.5 million worth of stamps.
Yeah, especially since he hadn't paid for them.
Yeah, exactly. You know, one of the big problems with any auction house is once you sell the stuff, to keep it sold.
Yeah, if it doesn't stay sold, then they either have to return it to the consignor or they have to resell it.
Yep, that'll sell.
And that may or may not bring them a higher or lower, you know, it may bring a higher or lower price. It may not bring the same price.
Well, this guy, if you read the article, he was bidding incredibly aggressively.
Well, we see it in U.S. stamps all the time where all it takes is two bidders bidding against each other and both of them have to have the stamp. And so the price just goes wild, but it's just those two guys. You take one out of the equation, and it goes for a reasonable price.
Yeah, yeah.
So that is a big concern for the auction house because they lose their commissions, they lose their sales, and it's all in their reputation.
Yeah, reputation is definitely a hit there.
I would certainly think that something on that rarity magnitude, taking out the top bidder, would see a substantial decrease
in return. Absolutely. It'll auction. Destroy it.
Absolutely. Immediately. I mean, if it were something to be 5 years later, you get a different pool. But, yeah, I would think they would go for considerably less.
And it would be interesting to see what Scott's catalog does. Because all these things have new sale prices. And then if the sale price doesn't stick, I guess they have to roll them back. I wonder if they already printed their British Guiana pricing section.
Well, the 1 cent magenta wasn't part of that sale.
That's true. And they make a big point of that.
And they do make a big point of that in the article. So that price will stick.
Yeah, that stamp was sold, paid for, and the person is still anonymous.
So I do have to ask one question, though, based on what you guys just said. If I buy a stamp for $1 million and I kick the bucket before I write you a check, how does that affect your reputation?
Well, it affects the reputation of the auction house because the auction house is going to have a $7.5 million sale and then a $4 million sale.
Yeah, or in your case, a $1 million sale and then possibly something less, maybe half of that.
There's no second chance offers in the auction world?
This isn't eBay.
Yeah. This is not eBay, yeah.
You don't email the next highest bidder and be like, hey, remember that stamp you wanted?
The other buyer backed out. You want it for his price?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you were the other buyer, you'd say, nah, I think I'll wait and see, you know, how much I have to pay the second time around. I mean, everybody knows.
On something like this where you are bidding against somebody else that is bidding so aggressively, absolutely, you would wait till the next time it goes around. Because it will definitely, over the long run, save you money.
Although, in theory, if that second bidder, say the estate contacted him and said, you know, would you like to buy it at that next lower bid so we can settle it up? It's one way of guaranteeing you get it. If it goes to auction again, you still might not get it.
That's true.
True.
They could just contact whoever it was and say, hey, the sale didn't go through. Let's negotiate.
Don't you guys have a story about two secretaries that went to an auction?
Oh, yeah. This was a shared at an auction house, and Larry Brassler is the auctioneer for H.R. Harmer in Santa Ana or Irvine, one or the other. And he was talking about how two business people couldn't make it to the auction. And so they sent their secretaries, and it was a nothing stamp. So they each told their secretary, just raise your hand and buy the stamp, you know, figuring it would be a couple $100. And after the stamp topped $3,000 from these two little ladies inside of the audience, the auctioneer said, stop, what's going on here? And the little old ladies said, well, my boss just said for me to raise my hand until I got the stamp. And the other one said, I was told the same thing.
Oops.
And so the auctioneer said, I think both of you should call your bosses and find out what, because it just went to insane numbers, and obviously somebody was going to be very unhappy.
Okay, so let's move on into updates now and Kaz's correction segment.
I don't have any corrections this
week. Yay, month. We've corrected Kaz.
It's drained him out.
There is one correction that isn't mine, but it's the Star Wars Tops set is not going to be released now in December. It's going to be released sometime in 2015. Jessica, you said something about that.
Yeah. I could imagine they're having trouble tracking down all of those stamps, though.
So. Oh, yeah.
I know so a couple to, people that could hook you up.
Yeah. So hard to find those stamps because, you know, they're postage.
And another update. We talked recently about the successful mission of the Philae probe. Mm-hmm. And Ascension Island decided to dedicate some stamps to that landing. So the artwork's really sci-fi-y on them. It looks really nice. And also another update about forgotten rarities. Linz recently reported that the 1970 registered cover is the 17th commercial use of the $5 Alexander Hamilton stamp to be discovered and reported. A collector from Ohio bought it on eBay in late October this year for $154.16. This stamp on cover has a Scott catalog value of $2,300. It is believed to have gone for such a bargain because the lister failed to include the descriptor of Liberty in the listing. So these high dollar postage stamps are worth infinitely more than their mint never hinged counterparts, from what I understand.
If it's an individual usage, I believe this was a $5 stamp where the rate was exactly $5.
No,
is that correct?
They showed a picture of the stamp on Linz.com, and it appeared that there were two other stamps on the cover as well.
Because I know that on the Prexies, individual usage stamps, like if you find a 24-cent stamp paying an actual 24-cent rate, is worth significantly more than you would expect.
Well, Liberties are going to be the next Prexies when it comes to postal history like that, yes. Especially the high dollar and the unusual values in the sets.
Yeah.
I also found that a number 39, 90-cent on cover is worth a lot more. Is it like 10 times more, 50 times more? Is it?
It's 10. It's used off cover, it's 10 times more than a no-gum mint example. And on cover is going to be some factor, again, higher than that.
Well, whenever you have these really high face value stamps on an envelope, not on a package or a parcel or something, but on something that somebody can put in their collection, it's always going to go for many, many times more than a mint stamp or a one-off cover, definitely.
So you can't just rip them off UPS packages and...
They don't take stamps.
Well, I collect express mail with stamps on it because you see a whole bunch of express mail stamps, but you don't see any of them on cover. And all the covers are, you know, the big, huge express mail covers. But sometimes you find them on letter envelopes, you know, number 10 envelopes. And in those cases, they're incredibly rare, and they're incredibly valuable, much more than on the big, giant ones, because nobody saves the big, giant envelopes. It's too big and giant-y.
Well, I have a bunch of friends that like to collect those used, modern, high-value stamps, and when I see them on an express mail envelope, since they're self-adhesive, I just cut it out, but I also leave the EMS, Express Mail Service logo, on the piece so that you can see that it's actually tied onto the, and it was properly used on an express mail cover. Because I think proper usage is also a big important factor, not just a philatelic usage or something like that where it overpays, but something where it actually pays for the service it was intended to.
Well, that's in particular the part with the Prexies issues. Is, you know, you can find a 20-cent stamp paying a 17-cent rate, but the idea is to find a 20-cent stamp paying a 20-cent rate. Or the Fourth Bureau issue is the same, where, you know, finding a 50-cent or a 30-cent stamp on an envelope paying a proper rate is rare. And what is the Ice House cover worth? What did that sell for?
Something ridiculous.
That one has a number 122, 90-cent, 1869 issue on it. And it's the only envelope they know that has a number 122 used on it. There's plenty of number 122s used, but none of them are on cover.
And that cover has been extensively repaired.
Oh, yeah. Well, it has, three stamps on it, and the third stamp was removed and replaced.
Yeah.
So it's not even the original stamp. But the 90 center, that's original.
Hmm.
So I have a quick question. You guys keep talking about proper use for the high-value stamps. What would improper be? Like overpaying, basically, 50 cents for a 20-cent letter?
Yeah, yeah. That would be one example.
Well, there's a 17-cent rate, and I believe it's the registered rate. A lot of times it was paid with a 7-cent stamp and a 10-cent stamp. Rarely it was paid with a 17-cent stamp. Sometimes they just stuck a 20-cent stamp on it. So the 10-cent, the 7-cent, paying the proper rate, not very collectible. People don't care. The 17-cent, everybody wants. The 20-cent, paying a 17-cent rate, devalues the value.
It's considered a convenience overpayment. And those are less desirable.
Hmm.
And so, but like when you're talking about proper usage in the terms of airmail or special delivery, express mail, priority mail, things like that, you're also looking at, okay, I sent grandma a package this year and I stuck 3 priority mail stamps on it, but the thing went surface mail to get there and it took them 3 weeks to get it there. Well, that's not using a stamp to pay the proper service and the proper rating. You're just making it up with what's available. You want to see a priority mail stamp on a package in its period of usage, and preferably a solo usage. Now, nowadays, the priority mail is all flat rate, so you want to see a single stamp on a priority package paying the priority mail rate.
You brought up a great point there. Contemporary usage also.
Absolutely. Contemporary. And when you're talking about a commemorative stamp, you want to see it on a letter usually within the year of its issue date. The older the commemorative is, then that kind of fluctuates. You can go a little bit further because not so many commemoratives were issued. But nowadays, so many commemoratives are issued, you really want to see it within the first year of usage.
Well, I'm looking for
a year after issue.
Because of my chicken collection.
Chicken collection.
I'm looking for the chicken stamp on non-philatelic usage. And you go on eBay and you can find 500 first day covers. And not a single actual envelope. And I would love to find one like from Tyson Foods. I mean, they've got to be out there. Tyson Foods had to have said, hey, there's chicken stamps. Let's buy some and send some letters to somebody. And that's what I'm looking for.
That makes me think of the Bell phone company using the Alexander Graham Bell stamp.
Yeah.
That would be a fun cover to have.
It might turn some people into vegetarians.
Yeah.
We had a few questions come in from listeners and Facebook followers this week that we wanted to share. They asked where they could find newer and up-to-date articles and books on stamps. There are several new sources and reputable online stamp content besides finding new articles at Linz and the APS. There are numerous ebooks available through the Amazon Kindle store. One of them that caught my eye was the Jenny Invert Plate Number Block by Donald Sundman. It's basically the history of what used to be his plate block. I believe he recently traded it, or for money.
He recently sold it.
Sold it.
Yeah. Traded it for money. I like that.
Absolutely.
Well, the stamps is only trading. There's no selling because you have it and you curate it and then it goes to someone else for money.
I'd like to see you convince Disney of that when we were trading pins. Yeah, right. I'm trading for money.
Yeah. Another book on the history of America in 36 postage stamps that looks really interesting. For older books, Gutenberg.org has several open source books. One of them is John N. Luff, What Philately Teaches, a lecture delivered before a section on philately in the Brooklyn Institute of Arts and Sciences in February 24, 1899.
Oh.
For some good historical books. And also there's a blog. They produce several of their own books. It's called stampcollectingblog.com. And he also printed an article recently saying that ebooks are the future of stamp collecting. And another good source, which was surprising to me, was Forbes.com. We found an interesting source of online knowledge about stamps. Richard Lehman writes regular articles for Forbes magazine on stamps and stamp collecting. However, his perspective is unique in the sense that he looks at stamps as far more than a hobby, rather an investment opportunity. So what do you guys think about that take on stamp collecting?
Well, first of all, giving the disclaimer that we do not address stamp collecting as investing, that's a no-no. Let's go ahead and address stamp collecting as investing.
It's in Forbes. He says...
Realistically, whenever you have inflation, which there is inflation, and it's coming, we have a huge debt. All the countries are, you know, around us are having the same thing. Russia is going through hyperinflation. Whenever you have inflation, people take their money and they put it into hard assets. The hard assets that people can put it into that's the best is like real estate. Well, you can't put $100 into real estate, but you can certainly put $100 into stamp and coin collecting. And that's why during these sort of time periods, stamps and coins shoot up in value. They always have. It will come again. And quite frankly, there's a lot of people who are surprised.
It's not just stamps and coins, though. It's pretty much a lot of, almost all different kinds of collectibles go up in value. Anything that has a perceived value that you can hold for a time and resell, that's what people will put their money into.
But they want a historical track record.
Right, and real estate's the king of the hill, but all of these other things are out there where somebody can sink small amounts in. I mean, you can decide to buy gold or silver, you can buy real estate, you can buy cars, you can buy stamps or coins, you can buy all sorts of different things. But the point is not to have your money in the stock market.
Well,
stock market may not be bad. It's just cash you want to avoid. You're hedging against cash.
Yeah.
Because it's being devalued.
Right.
So from that standpoint, you know, there have been great time periods where stamps have increased in value 15% per year, 20% per year. Then there's been other times when they've never really fallen that amount, but you have some steady decline sometimes in the 3 to 5%, and every so often there will be an adjustment. But the history of stamp collecting and coin collecting, there have been gains as long as you hold on to your stuff long enough, and long enough is usually like 5 years. So if you hold on to something for 5 years and it's a stamp, you know, you're going to probably make a profit as long as you buy it intelligently. And that's the real thing that was addressed in Forbes.
Well, you can pretty much talk to any stamp dealer and ask them what's the key to feeding your family. And the key is buying the stamps at a price where you can sell them and make your money.
Arbitrage.
Right. Well, what he was speaking about in his was condition, quality, buying quality. And that's always what has driven the markets in the past is quality. Really nice stuff has gone up in value. Common stuff, you know, I do not recall, it was a comment from the 1920s, and they said you should buy one stamp for a dollar instead of 20 stamps for a nickel, because the 20 stamps for a nickel will still be worth a nickel, and the stamp they bought for $1 will go up in value. And that's sort of the same thing it is today. High quality stamps go up in value. Low quality stamps don't. Even the 1 cent British Guiana really didn't have that. It made a lot of money, but on a percentage basis, it was only a fair investment.
Yeah, even though it brought 10 times what it brought the last time it was sold, because of inflation, it just didn't cut it.
Well, I think that it's not just because of inflation. I think it's because the stamp doesn't... It's unique, and it has a story, but it doesn't have the quality factor to it. It isn't a nice stamp. If it was a nice stamp in the same condition, in the same circumstances, if the kid who found the stamp had found a really nice one on the envelope, and it was a gorgeous stamp, you'd be speaking much more money than you are today. I mean, realistically.
Well, I think you're also at a price point where there aren't as many buyers either.
Well, that's true, too.
You're buying the history. You're not buying the stamp.
Yeah.
Well, you're buying the stamp, too.
Oh, it's a bonus. You put it on your mantle and be like, that cost me money, and here's the story.
It wouldn't go on a mantle.
Yeah.
Nowhere's near a fire.
There you go.
Well, I want to remind everybody, and this is going to make Scott unhappy, but I have a picture of a Festivus. A Festivus foal, and yesterday was Festivus. And some of us celebrated and actually experienced a couple Festivus miracles. My car came out of the repair shop and was good driving condition, an obvious Festivus miracle. But one of the characteristics of the holiday is to express your grievances. So I'll start. The new Batman sheet with a little round coin size
bat signal
stamps. I think those are ridiculous. And that's my grievance for the end of 2014. Post office, get yourself in line.
Make bigger bat signals.
I think my grievance is the fact that you just brought up Festivus stamp collecting podcast.
It has to do with stamps.
No, it doesn't.
What's the motto for Festivus?
Festivus is a holiday for the rest of us.
There you go. My grievance is that they did not have a postage stamp, U.S. postage stamp, for the 40th anniversary of Hello Kitty, which had its first convention here in the United States. So that's my grievance.
You could have made a cover.
Hmm.
Tom?
I guess I'm just lazy.
Welcome.
Cover's coming soon.
Welcome to stamp collecting.
I recognized that look. That was the going off for the idea.
I found a couple people in the last couple of years that find a lot of fun in sort of making their own stamp items. And a lot of that is coming through either handmade cachets for first day covers or for event covers and things like that, or just simply making mail that they're going to want to get back. So to Cash's point, if you can find some of these high denomination things on a collectible sized letter, but at the same time, there are people that are artsy that will then doctor the cover of that letter to be even more interesting.
I do it myself. I made a event cover for Carmageddon when it was here.
Oh, I bought one of those. You made that?
I made those.
Oh my.
And I made the
Carl gave me a good deal on one.
Oh god.
Yeah, I would have given you a better one.
In that case you overpaid.
And oh, I have them from the day that Osama bin Laden was killed. Ooh. And the one that I'm looking for is I want an uncacheted chicken stamp first day cover, and I want to put Peter Griffin and the rooster fighting on it.
I'll take a look for you.
But any other grievances?
Grievances.
You're here.
I don't think I have grievances. Yeah, I think I'm very happy to have a hobby.
It's Festivus.
Like this.
You have to express your grievances. Look at the
all right,
poll, okay?
I'm going to grievance your poll. You talk about quality, yet it's made out of Pabst Blue Ribbon cans.
So what do you had lying around, apparently?
It's supposed to be aluminum.
Oh. It's a good shot, Steve.
I think if I had to have a grievance, it would be that I think the Postal Service needs to come out with more stamps that have better artwork on them. I have to say, at the end of the year, the circus stamps were really cool.
Yeah.
But it's the first ones that I've seen in quite a while, other than, you know, personally, because I like them, the Priority and Express Mail stamps, the landscapes.
I have to agree with you on that one a little bit. It's frustrating when we see some of these beautiful, really new China sheets come in. Gorgeous artwork. I can't believe what they pour into their stamps. And my comparison is we got ferns.
We got ferns.
White coil stamps with green ferns.
And what the waves? Don't forget the waves.
Oh, yeah. Some of us like the waves, though. Yeah.
The waves were cool, I thought.
They look a lot better as single stamps than they do as a sheet. And which is actually true of a lot of these multi-stamp sheets that they issue
but
now.
But they're harder than heck to get off the covers, too. Mm. They don't even come off well with orange spray.
Yeah. People are just leaving them on now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just cut around like an envelope square.
Yeah.
Wave sheets give me headaches. Too many lines.
I haven't seen it yet, actually. I will make a comment about the Postal Service, though. If you go back in time, stamps like Alfred E. Smith comes to mind from 44. They'll put somebody on there, they'll put the name, but they won't tell you anything about what the person is. Now, it's a great learning opportunity, but it'd be nice if they just gave you the first step, like a businessman or
my
CEO or something, you know.
My two favorite stamps, I believe they're from, I know they're from the late 80s. One of them is the Christmas stamp where it had like the four-year-old picture of Santa Claus. And the other one was family violence or family unity or whatever. And it showed like little four-year-old kid drawing stick figures. And both stamps in their year got not only the worst stamp of the year, but got the worst stamp of the year like run away. 80% of the people agreed. So the Postal Service has some really good stinkers out there.
The first stamp to list an occupation on the stamp was a Puerto Rican guy who was the governor of Puerto Rico.
Oh.
And it actually said that on the stamp.
Yeah, it said governor.
I remember that one.
I own it.
I think you're wrong.
Oh, no.
Because it showed Columbus, discoverer of America. And he, since his profession was discoverer.
No, he was an
explorer.
A failed
discoverer. Isn't that the same?
No, you gotta find something to be a discoverer.
Not a big. The American Indians aren't a big fan of that guy.
Founder of Bahamas.
Well, it could be the, Admiral Zheng? What was his name? Zheng?
Zheng Shi,
or.
Something like that.
So we can toss Columbus and go with Admiral Zheng.
Yep. My one grievance would be Scott Catalog needs to give the Jenny sheet, the uninverted inverted Jenny sheet, a real Scott Catalog number.
And the circus sheet.
And the circus sheet, yes. I guess in general they need to do better with issuing their Scott numbers for new stamps.
They need to change their policy.
Yes.
They have a policy that I think is outdated.
Well, I think their policy...
I understand why they have it, where it comes from, but I don't agree with it. There are certain exceptions, and I think these are exceptions. They should be listed.
I think if you had something... I characterize it by saying, yeah, that's a great rule. Oh, you're applying it to me? This rule sucks. But I think that rule hurts
the hobby.
No, I agree with you. I think that when you talk about Grenada issuing stamps for some dealer, the dealer has the stock. I think that you need to have something in your policy that reflects the fact that it's not one person who is instigating the issue. That it is an issue that is put out by the post office and is made available to everybody and is actually made for postage.
Well, something like the uninverted Jenny or the circus souvenir sheet, you have these stamps that are valid for postage.
They are.
And yet they're not going to be listed. They should be listed in the catalog. The value is going to find its own place based on...
Yeah. Well, the uninverted
Jenny... But it should be listed because it is valid for postage. Yeah.
The uninverted Jenny, I equate to the reissued Western sheet.
Well, who in their right mind is going to use an uninverted Jenny? Probably nobody. Although it is possible that somebody might.
You can. Well, that's the point.
Yeah, well...
You could have used a C3A real inverted Jenny, too.
Yeah. I mean, right now I could go buy one for $5,000, theoretically, send it through the mail. It still would be, you know, proper contemporary use of the cancel, and I would have the only legitimately canceled one in existence.
Yeah, good luck getting that back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Armed guards.
That's going missing.
Well, the 1877 special printings. You know, they...
You mean the 1875 special
1875,
printings?
Sorry. And, you know, they issued number 3 and 4 and, well, all the 102s and everything else. Those were valid for postage. Very, very few of them were used, but they were valid for postage. When they issued the official stamps...
3 and 4 were not.
Okay. The... Are you sure? No. Okay.
3 and 4 were not.
I thought they were. When they issued the officials, because they issued the officials at exactly the same time, they overprinted them with specimen so that they wouldn't be used. But Scott's catalog lists all of those, which are clearly against their policy. It clearly is against their policy. But you're not going to go back for something that was listed, you know, 100 years ago and say, I'm sorry, we're delisting these items.
Well, it's interesting. I was reading about the officials and how they were collected back in the early part of the 20th century, and the specimens, because you could write to the government and get a full set, they were really dissed in the collecting community, and you had to collect them as they were, without the specimen overprint, basically. And even after they were technically withdrawn and invalidated, a lot of the departments never turned in their remainder stocks for destruction. And they would hand them out to people, particularly, you know, young boy collectors who would come by the offices to see the offices and ask for stamps. They would give them complete sets when they were available. As here, thanks for visiting, and because the boys would come and ask for them, and that's how a lot of those got out into collector hands. But and so those are the ones that became more collectible rather than the specimen stamps. Even though the specimen stamps are rare,
well, just because something is rare doesn't mean it's valuable.
Right,
it's always the case.
And just because something's not collectible or valuable now doesn't mean that 20, 50 years from now it is.
Well, because of that, so many of the unused officials got out. There are a number of departments, like the executive department, and where the used stamps are actually scarcer and harder to find in used condition.
I think you can best sum it up by saying it's a Festivus miracle.
That's really opened up a can of Festivus worms.
That's okay. What that smell is.
Let's move on to stamp stories.
Blame it on cash.
Happy Festivus.
There you go. Stamp stories. New year, new chances to add to your stamp collection. What plans or goals do you have for stamp collection in 2015? Me, personally, I have a pile of stuff to organize, and then organize, and then organize again. What about you guys?
Sell, sell, sell.
Ah.
I'm working on my early India.
To get a freaking 122.
That's a good stamp.
Yeah. I have a 121 that's gorgeous.
I have about 8 121s. I have one 122.
No, I got a 121 back with a cert. It was a shaved proof, reperforated on all sides.
Oh, yeah.
With a fake gum. And then re-gummed over the fake grill. It looked fantastic and was 100% fake.
It was
no,
a dream.
It was a genuine proof.
Yeah, it was a genuine
proof. No, 100% fake was the photocopy we got of a laser jet we got a couple weeks ago.
That was a funny one.
Number two.
Submitted as a number two.
And it was a number two.
You put your... put your loop on it, and you can see all the little red and green and black dots.
Why is this stamp pixelated?
Wow. Steve, do you have any goals for next year for your collection?
Well, organizing is always a big priority for me, and I need to trim down what I collect. I'm going to keep my big three of Tanatuva, Hawaii, and Tasmanian town councils. They're nearest and dearest, but too many to manage and maintain. So,
and they all have so much in common that you can almost put them on the same page.
As much as you can put all of us in a single phone booth.
Yeah. I'm out. Well, not with you guys.
Well, tell us about your goals at Stamp Show Today on Facebook or Stamp Show HT on Twitter. Hashtag Stamp Stories, hashtag 2015. So our expert topic this week is bluish paper, which from the definition is a total quandary. Why is it bluish paper?
Well, first of all, people who listened last week when we were discussing color said that this deserved its own section. So we're going to go over it from a section of, is it blue? And Scott is the expert on this.
And real quick, that's what one thing I wanted to preface with this too, is I had a friend who first heard of bluish paper, and for 2 months she was looking for blue stamps. So this definitely needs to be cleared up.
Well,
depends on the country you're talking about as well.
Well, first of all, we're talking about the United States stamps.
Actually, we can be talking about Britain also, because
this particular topic, we're going to target the U.S. Washington Franklin paper
experiment. We have a worldwide audience.
I understand that. But this is the expert topic for U.S. stamps, and we're talking about the Washington Franklin paper experiments that the Bureau did in the early 20th century, and they used a 15% rag stock instead of 100% wool, wood pulp. They added 15% rag stock to the mixture when they made the paper.
Which is, rag stock is?
Rag stock is cotton cloth, basically. And the majority of cotton cloth that they were using had blue dye and was bleached to kill any bacteria and all of that, so it makes the cotton rags appear blue, which is what gives it the name. But when you mix it with the wood pulp, it actually looks like it's a grayish color, but it comes out much thicker and much darker than the normal 100% wood pulp paper that is the normal issue. Now, the Bureau did not adopt this paper, so they it was just an experiment. But they did print quite a few 1 cent, 2 cent sheets for the Washington Franklin. They also printed part of the Lincoln commemorative stamp on that particular paper. The Lincoln stamp is actually not too rare. And the 1 cent and 2 cent stamps are not too rare. But the other values up to the 15 cent are generally quite rare.
Heck of rare.
Probably the 13 cent and the 3 cent being the least rare of those. Some of the values only had one sheet printed, so that makes them exceedingly rare. And two of the values, the 4 cent and the, I want to say the 4 cent and the 8 cent, were never issued. So they are exceedingly rare, but they're also not too difficult to tell. The paper under magnification has a coarser appearance than the normal wood pulp, and there's two varieties. One is the actual bluish paper that we're talking about, and the other is what's called experimental gray paper, which has a much finer the ragstock was mulched much finer, and the paper has a very, very, very fine texture to it versus the coarser texture of the bluish paper. And they both generally fall under the bluish paper category. It's very, very difficult to tell them apart unless you are an expert. And they pretty much trade at the same level under the same catalog number. So, but there are two very slight varieties out there.
Well, I have a great reference of a two-center that I love, and I hold it to everything because it has a margin on it, or a selvage on it. And when you hold it to the light, you hold a normal stamp to the light, and it looks like normal paper. You hold the bluish paper to the light, and it just looks very mottled, very yellowish.
It appears very dark. Usually it's very easy to see the watermark when you hold it up to the light, whereas on normal paper, Washington Franklin, you hold it up to the light and sometimes you can see the watermark, sometimes you can't. But on bluish papers, it's generally true that the watermarks are generally very clear.
And what color is bluish paper?
It's actually grayish brown. One trick, the best trick that I know of that's really cheap and really easy is to place a normal stamp and your suspected bluish paper stamp on an orange background and an orange post-it note. Post-it notes are cheap. You can buy a little package of post-it notes. Put them on orange paper and look at the difference, and one of them will just pop really dark and the other one will just kind of stay normal off-white color. And that's the easiest way to tell, and it's because the orange is a complementary color to what's in the bluish paper. And so it makes them really, really easy to see.
So, Scott, I've heard of China clay paper in that same time period. Are you familiar with that and how to tell that? Because it's also a grayish tone, isn't it?
Well, China clay paper is not really it was never an intentional paper variety, and the specialists really think that the origin of that just happened to be dirty water in the papermaking process. There was a higher silt content in the water that they mixed the wood pulp with, and that's what created the slightly different color and texture of the China clay paper. They generally have a little more translucence, and the paper does look a little bit darker. I have heard some people say that they get them confused with bluish papers, but I have not really had that impression when I've examined them. Like I said, the translucency of the paper really kind of gives it away. And they are quite rare. They are unlisted now in the catalog. But there's definitely something different about them. But I don't think it is something that should be, unless you're going to specialize in that area, it's not something that a general collector would probably be interested in.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. They delisted them. They took them out of the Scott catalog.
Right.
What else did they ever take out of the Scott catalog?
They take things out all the time.
Oh. Like major numbers?
Yeah, occasionally.
Huh.
They'll
I can't think of any.
Well, they'll find out that certain things that might have been listed 60, 70 years ago no longer exist. They haven't been seen. And they'll run a little note after the listing saying the editors would like to see evidence of certified examples. Mm. And they might run that note for 5 or 10 years. And if they get no evidence that item exists any longer, a lot of times sometimes they'll pull the listing.
Interesting.
So, I mean, nowadays, sometimes things get broken up, too.
Yeah. Well, because this is the first time that
20 years ago, there were plenty of Colombian sheets. Yeah. Dollar value sheets.
Yeah, but
Now try and find a set of dollar value Colombian sheets.
Yeah, but they're not going to delist number 242.
No, they're not. But, plate blocks have been broken up for grading, and for whatever reason, plate block collecting is not in vogue. Single cell.
But single numbers. I'm trying to think of a number other than China clay paper.
That was a minor letter. It didn't have a major.
It was a minor letter?
It was a minor letter.
Oh, okay. Well, that fits then.
I know they move stuff around all the time. I just had a stamp. I know what it ended up. It ended up as a number 1214. It used to be in the Liberty series.
Yep.
Yeah. I was looking in a newer catalog, could not find that stupid stamp because the customer submitted it under the old Scott number.
Was that the 8-cent Pershing?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that number is missing. That doesn't exist in there anymore.
Yeah, that was one that they wrote about a long time ago. It should have, when they separated out the 1-cent, the 5-cent, the 8-cent should have went with it.
Mm-hmm.
And instead they included it in the other area. Which it also is interesting to me, for me, because I'm just weird. But after that stamp, there's like 10 missing numbers.
Well, they figured they were going to issue a whole other series, and they never did.
And I love using those numbers to, like, throw people off. Like, I'm looking for mint never hinge plate blocks of 1218 or something like that that doesn't exist. And everybody goes, what's a 1218? What's a 1218?
So basically, like rare works of art and rare personal history went down with the Titanic. So do the rare works of art no longer exist? And those old postal covers no longer exist?
Well,
even though they did exist at one time?
Yes. But.
Well, there are certain things in the catalog, like if you look at the.
I don't think anything is ever going to go extinct.
If you look at the. Well, take look at the AEF panes. You have the 1-cent and the 2-cent panes of 30 for AEF. Now, the 1-cent, you have 1-cent and 2-cent full panes. The 1-cent, you have complete booklets. The 2-cent, you no longer have a booklet. Yet, the Scott catalog still lists the booklet because they have covers and they have full panes. They just don't have intact booklets. And they still list it just for the record to say it did exist, but none are known to exist now.
I was just reading that like a month and a half ago.
Yeah, that's something that's an example where they didn't take it out, even knowing that it no longer exists.
Well, it no longer knowingly exists. Right. As with anything, you never know what might show up.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, getting back to the blue paper, the next thing that we were going to talk about was fakes. And I've seen two fakes. One of them is people throw them in with, like, blue dye.
Food coloring, usually.
Or food coloring. And the other one, which is not so, is they'll get a 5-center. And it'll have, like, bleed from the ink, from the print process. And it's a blue stamp, and it makes the paper look blue. Wow, big surprise. And we get a whole bunch of 5-centers submitted on blue paper. If you do the post-it note test, which, you know, you put it on the post-it note and you look and see if it's gray, all of a sudden all these blue stamps, you look at it actually on the paper and you go, yeah, not there.
But didn't you say that some of them are ridiculously blue?
Yes. Yes.
It's like somebody took a blue Sharpie to it.
I've seen ones that look like they were dipped in Kool-Aid.
Yeah. And when you do something like that, though, the perforations, the paper fibers that are broken along the perforations, they tend to absorb the bluish color more heavily than the general paper. And right. So that's also a tip-off that it's a fake bluish coloring to the paper.
And I'll give a foreign example. I have a Victoria 2/6 that comes on bluish paper or white. And this stamp has kind of a blotched bluish to it. So it's like, well, was it bluish or not? But back in the day, people had inkwells, and the predominant colors were indigo and black. So it wouldn't have taken a genius to have tried to, well, let's throw a little blue ink in and I can make some bluish paper. And
Well, the Great Britain number 3s, you see that every so often because they'll soak their stamps and the ink will discolor the paper. But it's not the right blue because like a bluish paper back then is interesting, and you can see, you know, the ivory heads and stuff in it. And if it's just soaked, you don't get ivory heads and things like that either.
Well, you want to talk about a different bluish paper. U.S. number 1 and 2 were printed on bluish paper. And that's a different type of bluish paper. That type, they actually used a lazurite crystal and mixed it in with the wood pulp when they made the paper. So under 20 power magnification, you can actually see the little tiny blue lazurite crystals discreetly in the paper.
Why did they do that?
That's how they made the paper. That's what gave it the bluish cast.
All right, I'm looking at my number one when I get home.
Yeah.
And you can find some examples where the paper is really blue and other examples where the paper doesn't even really appear blue.
Is that listed in Scott Catalog?
No.
It didn't think
well,
so.
Yeah, it's listed as bluish. One and two are listed as on bluish paper.
No. I didn't even know that.
Yeah. And so when you look at the stamp...
It's a Festivus miracle.
Absolutely. You put it under yeah, it's a Festivus miracle. Cash actually admitted to learning something.
Was the New York Provisional also on that same kind of bluish paper?
Well, it was on bluish paper.
Yeah, it would be, because that was the standard way of making bluish paper.
Hmm. So if you're going to fake stamps, don't use blue dye, use gray dye.
Or lazurite crystals.
Or lazurite crystals, yeah.
Just leave things as they are.
So what's the value of the bluish paper? Are there some really valuable examples of that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes. Generally, most of them catalog in the four figures.
Well, even the one and two figures. Centers are five to ten times...
Yeah,
catalog.
Yeah, and the ones...
With certs, right? Not word of mouth.
Yeah, the common ones, the 1 cent, the 2 cent, and the Lincoln, are a few hundred dollars. But the other values are all going to be over $1,000.
So when you go to a stamp show, carry a piece of orange paper with you. Right, just in case.
That's right.
I think it's time for our C3A invert uninvert lottery.
Ooh, this would be a true Festivus miracle.
Oh, no. Please don't be.
If this is a real one, we will never live this down.
Well, if this is a real one, he has to share it with all of us.
And here it comes.
That would be the Festivus miracle.
It is.
Six of us at the table. Normal.
Oh, empty. Normal.
No.
He didn't even look at the stamp. Just look for the certificate.
Well, no, it comes with this card.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's this card will say, congratulations, you won it. So
yeah,
you can look
at
the stamp or you could look at the card.
The Willy Wonka golden ticket that comes with your stamp.
Well, it's still $12 in postage.
Eh.
Yay.
And eventually...
But is it well-centered like most of them aren't?
Oh, man.
Aren't there some fake...
Actually, this one's centered a little low, but it looks pretty good. What?
Popular varieties like Broken Wing or...
Oh, yeah.
Landing, it's a flat tire.
Nope, this one just has...
Steve threw his hands up. What are you talking about?
Chalk it all up to poor printing.
Yeah.
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 I'm up to date on the fact that I've got a few of these, and the colors seem to bleed
pretty bad on this issue. Very much terrible.
There's a grievance I have, is the print quality of... Postal Service's new stamps. The centering for die cutting is just absolutely horrid on the new issues.
Well, that's the surprising thing with this, and I know we've said this before.
I mean, that's one of the things.
This is going out to collectors.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that makes grading difficult in the modern era is the fact that the Postal Service just puts out poorly centered stamps.
Well, a lot of people don't even get stuff graded because they assume everything is grade 100. And it's like, no, everything is like guaranteed grade 70 nowadays.
Well, the inverts, the Jenny sheets are, I mean, their standards are like 75, 80.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
look at the stamps that come out of other countries like Canada and Germany. Look at the centering on
China.
Those.
China.
Nice. Or China.
British.
Dead on.
Really good, too.
Very, very nice. Very attractive. Happy to put those in a collection.
Yeah.
Ones that come out of the United States, you have to search for something that's decent enough to put in your collection.
And then you get, like, I still joke at the market stamp. the farmer's market stamp. It's like you couldn't come up with something more. And then I was reading about the stamp with children's activities or something like that, and it showed a stick figure riding a bicycle, and they withdrew it because he wasn't wearing a helmet. And it's like, it's a stick figure or whatever it was.
A skateboarder didn't have knee pads.
Yeah, stuff like that. It's like, oh my gosh. Come on, it's a stick figure. It's not going to hurt anything.
Wow. That does make me remember the New Zealand stamp showing a child and a teddy bear in a car seat that they withdrew.
Because
now it's a major rarity.
Because the belt was going over the teddy bear or from the wrong side or something.
Something close to the neck or something.
Yeah. The car seat was improper. It's like, give me a break. If the kid's in the car seat at all, then, you know, it should be a plus.
I don't think a helmet's going to help a stick figure if it gets too close to a fire.
I'll tell you, I never rode in a car seat as a kid, so. Exactly. And I survived. Therefore.
Yeah.
Well, one of my favorite moderns from the 60s is a little girl kind of looking off into the distance, and the caption is, "Retarded children can be helped." That tickled me so much, I bought a sheet of those guys. Those are hilarious.
So not PC.
That would be a great collection, a non-PC collection. What else would be in there? You definitely have to have some Colombians with
alcoholism.
Nah, that's
employ the handicapped.
Yeah, there you go, handicapped. Anything that says
I think that's the guy in the wheelchair at a drill press. I think is on that stamp.
Yep.
How about the original semi-postals of like consumptive homes back in the Australian states?
Yeah, but we need something that's really newer. Wacko, because that's I mean,
Michael Jackson stamps.
All right. Well, on that.
I was going to say about the Canada stamps. You talk about the quality. That's one of the things that I kind of miss. They used to be one of the great collectible countries because they did such a nice job on their stamps. One of my all-time favorites, anybody can pick it up for a dime to a quarter, is the Bell stamp, 1947. Mm-hmm. The design of that stamp is fantastic. And they all look good. We talk about the centering. They sort of always had a quality about them.
Well, when you talk about the most beautiful stamps, you know, it's always, you know, the Canadian blue nose or the dollar values. I like the destroyer stamp, you know, stuff like that. And they do. My personal favorite is the 12-cent Republic of Hawaii stamp with the ship on it.
Mm-hmm.
And you just don't see that sort of stuff anymore. Unfortunately.
No, talking about the post office, now it takes them like 18 months to get from stamp design to like produced. But in the case of history, you could make a better stamp, and I'll bring up Harding. I think that stamp was turned around in 30 days.
Yeah.
And it was engraved.
Yeah.
And they did frilly borders to all that stuff. I mean, that was not real frilly, but in that era still, they would borderize and, you know, make a very
well, attractive. I look at the inverted Jenny and the border on it. You mentioned the borders. Mm. You could have done so much, something better than that. I mean, to me, that looks kind of amateurish.
Well, it ought to be interesting to see what they do now that next year they're coming out with engraved stamps again.
Which I have the other question, and I was at the stamp show, and I still haven't gotten an answer. Simple things like the Wilt Chamberlain sheet. The side picture on the Wilt Chamberlain sheet shows him in a Philadelphia uniform instead of a Lakers uniform. It's like, who was designing the stamp? He's not famous because he was a Philadelphia 76er. He's famous because he was a Laker.
I think he was with Philadelphia when he did the 50-point average per game in a season and 100-point game.
I'm almost guaranteed you're wrong.
And now we have Cash's corrections for next week.
Okay, I gotta write this down.
Google it. On that note, we're gonna end the podcast. You can email us at stampshowhereToday@gmail.com with your questions and comments, and keep the conversation going at Twitter at stampshowht. And on that note, keep collecting.
Hi, this is Tom Mills, H.R. Harmer Stamp Auctions. You're listening to the podcast for Stamp Show Here Today.
I'm Brian Metz with OCStampStore.com with your stamp tip of the week. When you're looking at your 10-cent 1851 to 59 issue, look at the right side of the stamp. Do you see three pearls at the lower right? If you do, then it is probably type 1 through type 4. If you do not, then you can quickly eliminate it as type 5, a Scott number 35. For more U.S. stamp tips, sign up for my newsletter at OCStampStore.com.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurse, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today. She wrote upon it.